Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer, proprietor of Ryer on YouTube. You should check it out. All kinds of great content there, SEC related, certainly Alabama football related, but a variety of stuff on there that you should dive right into. Talking Tide, though, first and foremost, for sure, here on a Monday night, about 24 hours later than normal when we wrap up a podcast. Travis, the Crimson Tide gets it done in the first round of the CFP, 34-24 on the road at Oklahoma. Pretty wild game, certainly a game that looked awfully bad for Alabama early, but they come out on top, and it was a wild one. Some of these numbers kind of blow me away. We'll get into that in a minute. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it here on the channel during the game, immediately after the game. Just felt like a real reversal of the script from the first time that these two teams met. When you talk about stats are for losers, all those stats that we heard about that Alabama dominated Oklahoma in certain areas, a lot of areas of that first matchup looked the same way in this one. But it was like that first matchup, Alabama in the positive area, not only in takeaways and turnover margin, but turning them directly into points. And then special teams. I didn't have that one on my bingo card. Sorry, Chase. I didn't have Alabama getting a decisive and outright win in the kicking game. I felt like if Alabama could just play even with OU in special teams, that would be a big deal. Alabama did it one or more better than that in the win over OU.
Yeah, when things finally started to turn for Alabama, that was when Tim Keenan blocked a punt that should have been gotten off, and very, very late getting it off, and that's how that's ended up happening. That was the beginning. That was the spark that got Alabama started, and the spark that went out for OU was back-to-back missed field goals by the kid who can't miss on the back end. So special teams bookended this thing.
Really did, and I agree. I thought you had a flicker of belief at 17-7 after that 75-yard drive that got Alabama on the board, kind of kept Alabama. You were able to locate a pulse at that point at 17-7 with Lottie Brooks with a couple of huge plays on that drive. But, yeah, to your point, you got some help. You got some good fortune. With the punter for OU inexplicably just kind of dropping the drop. He dropped the drop, you know, and didn't drop the snap. You never see that. Keenan there, though, to make it hurt, make good on it. And, you know, even though you only got 3 points out of that, okay, now it's 17-10. Now somehow, some way, it's a one-score game after everything that happened. And, you know, that in and of itself, Chase, was late in the second quarter. I mean, that was down, you know, what, around 4 minute mark, something like that in the second quarter. Right. And so you feel like right there, hey, if you get in at 17-10, it's far better than you could have ever imagined. Sure. But then to get in at 17 all, you know, after the Xavier Brown pick six, that just unfathomable given the start for that game to OU.
Second pick six of the season for Brown. The other one, of course, coming against Tennessee. 149, roughly 150 interception return yards just between those two pick sixes, Travis. And, of course, both of them came right before the half in each game. Certainly, now Tennessee was really at the end of the half. This one, let's talk about how the half ended, because – there was some relevant play after that pick six, but before the half, Alabama's defense holds, Travis. Oklahoma had plenty of time after that pick six to move the ball, at least, you know, take a shot at a field goal, whatever. And they get this benefit of a 15-yard sideline interference penalty that just blew. Kalen DeBoer blew a gasket. Over that, he was not happy whatsoever. Your thoughts on that? And Alabama still ends up holding. I'm not sure Oklahoma managed the clock as well as it could have been managed down the stretch there. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right, because you sort of think about that finish to the half as well as Abian Brown with the pick six gets in the end zone, and you know Alabama's going to get the ball on top of everything else coming out to start the third quarter. But absolutely, you still had to go out there and get another stop. I'm sure by the letter of the rule, the call, and we saw it on the broadcast once they finally went to this big, broad view of it, basically from the light tower stanchions. I think they had a camera. You know, they got like 87 cameras at these college football playoff games, but we can't get a really good look at what happened on this sideline penalty. And I'm sure technically you can make that call, but man, that's a hell of a call to make in a college football playoff game, because it wasn't like the Alabama staffer or team party member or whoever the hell it was even on the green or even close to the green. Now,
right,
they may have been in that paint area where you're not supposed to be. But boy, that was a tough call. Give Alabama credit though. Played through it, still got the stop. And also, you know, that is good tape. You know, we talk about tape being good for coaches. Well, for your get back coach, that's good tape. Mm-hmm. You know, you can show that to everybody in your travel party or your team party and say, look, this got us 15 in a college football playoff game. You guys and gals or whoever got to stay out of the paint.
Right. And this was my thought on it, Travis. And I hear you that letter of the law, it could have been was a penalty. But how many yards would you estimate contact was made off the sideline? I would say, was it four yards off the sideline?
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't like the individual was right on the grass.
Right.
You had to want to call that.
Right, right. The officials, in my opinion, ought to have a mindset where
the further off the sideline they are, the
more tolerant they should be of contact, right? If you're four or 5 yards off the sideline, you should be more tolerant of contact than if somebody bumps you when you're inbounds, right?
Didn't impact the ability to judge the play or anything like that. It felt like kind of an ego call. Yeah. How dare someone obstruct me? And so here comes the flag, you know, and I always thought it would fall under something like the sideline warnings that we see, right? You see teams get a sideline warning without a penalty. No, this baby went straight to the 15. It was, I thought it was overly officious. I think I've heard Jim Morris Sr. Refer to it in some old NFL footage.
17 all the score at the break, brand new game. You knew Alabama had the momentum there, and they went on to finish it off. You mentioned at the top, Travis, how this was kind of a flip of the Oklahoma win in Tuscaloosa in a lot of ways. I agree 100%. Some numbers to back you up on that, a couple of which I thought were pretty remarkable. Alabama's total offense, 260. First downs, 12. Rushing average 1.1 yards, and on third down Alabama was 2 of 12, and they scored 34 points as a team.
Yeah,
you got the pick six in there, right? You got the help from, but those are concerning numbers for an offense, regardless of how many points go on the board.
Yeah, it wasn't a 34 point performance where you felt like, okay, the Alabama offense is back, right?
Right.
You still had your issues running the football, although I thought in the second half, Daniel Hill was pretty productive, ran for over 40 yards in the second half. You know, you still had your quarterback go down four times with sacks, but you took care of the football and you won the kicking game. And, you know, kind of like the first time around with Oklahoma, when we talked about Oklahoma only having 220 yards or whatever it was, well, start putting in those return yards on the punt return by Satania. In the pick six that OU had. Well, put Xavier Brown's 50 on there. Put the field position change with the muff punt attempt by OU. That's probably what, another perhaps 40, 45 yards right there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you start adding up another 100 yards, it looks a lot more even based on what OU was able to produce offensively.
Moving to Alabama's offense, quarterback position in particular, Travis, I wrote after the game that the first half of the season, Ty Simpson showed back up in the second half. Basically, the second half of this game for Simpson, that's what he looked like in October, when he was unbeatable. Did I overstate that?
No, I don't think you did. I just think they went about it a different way. September, October, they just made a living in the middle of the field, Chase, with that dagger concept, right, and those dig routes to Jeremy Bernard. I mean, they were humming in the middle of the field. And then, as you would expect, defenses adjusted. And I thought Friday night was the first time we really saw Alabama in the last four or five games say, okay, we're going to have to win this game outside the numbers. You know, we're going to get man coverage with Isaiah Horton. And he had a catch similar to the one he had on the sideline in Norman. He had one similar to that in Tuscaloosa. And if OU is going to give us man coverage and they're going to try to take away the middle of the field, then we're going to have to go to Lottie Brooks on a couple of slot fades. You know, the third and five that really kept the game alive in the second quarter that he caught on the way to that first touchdown for Alabama. Essentially, the touchdown he had in the third quarter was basically the same route. And so, you know, they were going to have to win the game outside the numbers more and more on the corner routes and things like that. And then once they did that some, they were able to get back to the middle of the field at least. You know, there was more balance in the passing game too. It wasn't just seemingly dependent on one person or one area of the field. And I thought they did a pretty good job. What about you of, you know, I know he was sacked four times, but all right, in all, I thought the protection at times was really good, especially on the occasions where Oklahoma brought six a couple of times.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer mentioned, and I agreed with him, that Alabama's pass protection was better than the sack numbers suggested it was. And if you're, you know, you can give up three or four sacks, but if you're giving your guy all day long the rest of the day, you can you can overcome that, right? And I don't know that it was that good, but certainly it was better than the sack total indicated. I agreed with that. And I thought relevant too was Simpson's ball security, right? No picks, no fumbles. This is something that's been part of his struggles that we've seen him go through. So that was a big plus. And I'll tell you what, there was one sack, and it was not to his blind side. It was to his front side, but he just didn't have any awareness at all that he was about to get whacked. I saw that, and I was like, here comes a strip, right? But they just went for the contact right there on that, and they nailed him, and it was a big sack, a big play for OU. But I thought that was going to be an attempted strip right there and a good chance to rip it out.
Yeah, I did too. There were a couple occasions where you're thinking, well, like you just said, here it comes. Ball's going to be on the ground. Let's see who gets on it. And that's the other side of it too. As long as you take care of the ball, it's not a total loss there. You know, we talk about yards for Alabama. Think about the yards they lost to drops again. You know, I mean, Jeremy Bernard, I felt like spoke that drop into existence after we heard him talk about the lights at Owen Field last week. And then again, Ryan Williams with an opportunity, Isaiah Horton early in the game, when you really need a first down to kind of get yourself going, he has one. They definitely could have capitalized. Now give some of these guys a lot of credit. You know, I mean, Jeremy had a hell of a catch down inside the 10. Great. Isaiah Horton won a one-on-one on the deep ball down the Oklahoma sideline on a really nice ball from Ty Simpson. But again, you think about Ty's numbers for that game, and you think about what they could have been. I thought they were really good, given that he didn't always, once again, get enough help from his receivers.
No, he had a good night, no doubt about it. Again, no turnovers was huge. He made some big throws, some accurate throws, some tough, some difficult throws. But I definitely saw a turn between the halves. I didn't I wasn't feeling it with Simpson at halftime, Travis. But whatever it was about the second half, his numbers were certainly better, but it wasn't just his numbers. I just felt like he looked more decisive, more in command, saw things a little bit better, and just kind of had the right look, you know, that we saw midseason.
I thought maybe because it was the second time around, Alabama had a little bit more of certainty pre-snap about what they were getting than they did maybe that first time. Because you think about some of the big plays for Ty, the two slot fades to Lottie Brooks, right, the deep ball to Isaiah Horton, the big play to Jeremy Bernard. And I thought they knew pre-snap what they were getting. And so even though they were shots, the ball was still coming out quicker, right?
Right.
They didn't have to process as much maybe post-snap as they did the first time around. And, you know, look, I think the quarterbacks really went different directions, to your point, after the half. I think the pick six shook John Mateer. I don't think he trusted what he was seeing nearly as much, because we can talk about the five sacks for Alabama and give the pass rush credit, but a lot of that had to do with he wasn't as decisive getting the ball out in the second half. I thought he was forced to hold it or felt like he had to hold it, and that helped the pass rush from time to time. Meanwhile, Ty was pretty decisive, I thought, and also I think got a little more comfortable and confident in his protection. And you know, we can say what we want about Jam Miller, but you can go back and watch the tape, and there's a couple of six-man pressures where, I mean, he steps up in there and just gets the job done. One of them was the drop by Ryan Williams. But I know, look, he's not Derrick Henry with the ball in his hands, Najee Harris, maybe even Brian Robinson. But, you know, when you got to keep your quarterback clean, that's still a guy that's going to be in there, and you want him in there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I thought interesting too, Travis, and we've seen I'll set this up. You can agree or disagree, but we've seen some drops by the backs of late. Miller had a big drop against Auburn, for instance. Daniel Hill had a drop in the SEC title game against Georgia that I think was the same play call of Miller's drop the previous week against Auburn, certainly a similar call. And they didn't throw to the backs at all, really, against OU.
No
catches for any of the backs. And I don't even remember them getting – I'm sure there was a target or two, but certainly not many targets. But, you know, Quavis's return played into that a little bit, right?
Oh, I think it did. And it wasn't his first matchup with OU, but given what it looked like he was still obviously dealing with, I mean, he was healthier than he probably has been since that injury, I'm sure. But that still wasn't the Josh Quavis we saw against OU the first time. But it was still massively important, you know, because even on Lottie Brooks's fourth down touchdown to get Alabama on the board, you know, they run this concept where Quavis sort of goes to the corner and sort of creates enough space. I think they could have gone to Quavis there. But, yeah, I think Quavis is – incredibly big. You know, I thought one of the few, very few bright spots, especially offensively in the first quarter and change, was a couple of receptions by Quavis that we saw. He hit the seam on the one for a chunk. But boy, to think about how he might be even more ramped up when you go to play Indiana, that's a real positive for this offense. And I'll say this too about the pre-snap stuff. With Ty, I thought Ty, some of these were RPOs, and I thought Ty on a couple occasions pulled it and looked to hit the explosive plays in the passing game. Now, you know, if that last throw to Ryan Williams was RPO and that's where he decided to go on that third down,
right,
where you kind of held your breath a little bit. Not sure about that one, but I think in some other instances, he was certainly right on.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. You know, I thought that, you know, I don't know what to make of of Williams at this point. He's disappeared from the offense. Let's be honest about that. A play here and there, made a play or two against Georgia, I understand. I mean, he's hadn't disappeared completely, but he has not had more than five targets, I believe, since the Tennessee game, or maybe the South Carolina game. I think it might be South Carolina game. No targets against Auburn a couple weeks ago to end the season. Drops, he's had 10 of them, according to Pro Football Focus. So drops have been a big issue for sure. It's visibly clear that confidence is an issue. And yet this is one of the best five athletes on your roster.
Yeah, easily. And I still thought they tried to script some things for him. They line him up in the backfield and they run that screen action out to the right. But Marvin Jones Jr., you know, goes out there with the back, kind of blows it up. And then Ty tries to come back to the other side and gets sacked by Kip Lewis off the edge. So there's still some things in there that you see. But to the extent that we anticipated going into this season, no. And it makes me think, if that's really the case, big picture wise, the concern is this isn't just a game day thing with him then, because this must be something that's a problem throughout the week. And I'm not talking about from an effort perspective, but just the struggles that he's had. Because if it wasn't a problem during the week, they would still be building in more for him in terms of just manufacturing touches any way possible. Right. And they're not really doing that at this point. I mean, Lottie Brooks is a guy they're dialing up and playing a ton. So, you know, it feels like it's just sort of shifted that way. And, you know, the drop he had on the Alabama sideline, that's just, to me, that was just fundamental hand placement on that ball. Yeah. You know, he's got a hand up, a hand down, trying to catch a ball up here like that. I mean, thumbs down, right? Good, Brad?
Right. Yeah.
It's not to you. Thumbs down, you know,
That's what they told us.
I don't know.
They told us.
We're old, though. We're old.
On the banks of the St. John's. I think, too, Travis, and we've talked about this a little bit on Ryan Williams, it's clear enough to me that he's not liking contact a lot this year. Maybe that's got something to do with being banged up. Maybe it doesn't. But the intermediate stuff, the middle of the field, post routes, that's where he's least comfortable. That's, you know, the bottom line, which leaves two options if you're going to try to get him involved, basically. All right. You can either get it into his hands right now with smoke screens, jet sweep, you know, reverse, whatever, quick out, or you can go for a chunk play with him if you see a one-on-one opportunity. But not the middle of the field, right? If you just forget about the middle of the field. If you're trying to get him involved, Travis, do you think it'd be better to get him involved in the quick game or get him involved with an explosive?
I would still lean towards vertical with him, because even if you don't hit him, it helps you in other areas of your offense, because you might. You know, he is a legitimate threat in the vertical passing game. He did have a couple of quick game plays against Georgia. But if you were going to ask me one area that I would emphasize with him, it would continue to be the vertical game, because, you know, I can at least run off coverage and create some space for some other guys with what he's still able to present with that speed in getting over the top.
Yeah. I think to kind of accentuate your point, they can run quick game without him, but it's a lot harder to throw deep without him, right? Yep. I mean, he's – you don't have a better option in the vertical game than Ryan Williams, notwithstanding the drops. Yep. Whereas if you want to run quick game, yeah, he can be a part of that, but you got a handful of guys that can get it done in that department.
Yeah, Lumpy Diz chiming in here in the show chat. And by the way, we appreciate – each and every one of you who are checking in with us live on a Monday night here on Talking Tide. Lumpy Diz says, Ryan, he puts forth that Ryan Williams has had the yip since he got the concussion That was Florida State, obviously, in the season opener. That was a big shot. The only thing with that is that after that, even against Georgia, I saw Ryan kind of put himself in some positions where it was a physical situation and he didn't back down from it. Right. So I don't know if that specifically was it. I just think, speaking of Georgia, I mean, he has a deep ball. Goes right. I think it's just really a confidence thing in general at this point, you know, and how do you get that back at this point in the season? I don't know if you do. I think it may be something you have to get into the off season and try to figure out.
Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, we want to thank our viewers and listeners and ask you if you would to donate to ParkerCoversAlabama.com. It's a 501c3 nonprofit organization supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents, founded by myself, John Copeland, for Mike Parker, who is a friend of Travis's and myself. We lost him in February. We love Mike very dearly. And we named this charity in Mike's honor. Again, it's ParkerCoversAlabama.com, supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. The Talk It Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, Travis, let's branch out a little bit and talk some CFP as we close things out. Elsewhere in the postseason, Travis, the day following Alabama's win over Oklahoma, Miami knocks off Texas A&M 10-3. That was wild. Ole Miss drums Tulane 41-10. Oregon 51-34 over James Madison. Miami, Texas A&M will devote the most time to talking about, of course. But just to wrap up Oregon quickly, Travis, I'm going to be fully honest. And part of this is because I didn't get any sleep at all because I had an early flight after the Oklahoma game. But I quit watching Oregon James Madison at 34-3. 34-3, I'd seen enough, Travis.
You know, didn't quit watching, though? The man.
Yeah,
sure. And James Madison, you know, with that backdoor cover in the second half. But I was that way with the second and third games on Saturday. I really enjoyed Miami and Texas A&M, even though it was a 10-3 game. It felt like a slugfest. Give Miami a lot of credit. I mean, we saw this with A&M in the second half of that Texas game. Texas got the run game going in the third and fourth quarters, and Miami ran it on Texas A&M too. So that offense for A&M, Marcel Reed, the rest of those playmakers that they did have, just not able to muster much. Reuben Bain, just dominant as an edge defender. Those two edges for Miami are the real deal. So I think we are, you know, it's going to take us getting to the quarterfinals, Chase, but we're going to have some really, really fun matchups here in these next four games. What about you in terms of what do you do with the G5s at this point? I mean, it was predictable what we were going to get in Oxford and in Eugene. And, you know, I know there's some changes coming. I'm probably going to have an expanded field. I like the idea of representation from that level, but I mean, there's got to be a situation where it's at least competitive football, you know, well, before it's something we can really ride with long-term.
Let me ask you this. I agree with you. It wouldn't hurt my feelings at all if the G5 ran its own playoff. Are you aware? I'm asking this question. I'm not aware of any. Are you aware of any G5s that are revenue sharing?
Not really.
I mean, that's the line. That's kind of a line of demarcation now that you
know. Well, I do think Memphis is. Memphis, I believe, has reached that point. Memphis has, and there's one other that I'm trying to think of, and I'm struggling with it. Maybe two, I guess, to answer your question.
Point being, that's the line in the that's a new line in the sand, right over the old line in the sand, right? It's been harder for G5 to compete for a long time. Revenue sharing is going to make it all the more harder for G5 to compete because they're not participating. They're not doing it. They don't have a $20 million NIL base like the Power Fours do. And guess what? In 5 years, it'll be $30 million or more. You know, that's where that's going.
Well, so, Memphis is one of the very few at that level that have it. And even their head coach left for Arkansas as quickly as he could, or the SEC, and not a top job in the SEC, right? In Ryan Silverfield. So even the few that do have it, not all revenue sharing is going to be the same, even for the few that do.
No doubt about it. But yeah, Texas A&M, getting back to that one real quick, though, Travis, what a bitter pill. If you're an Aggies fan, you're sitting a couple weeks ago at 11-0.
Yeah.
And here's your finish. Arch rival big brother knocks you off in a rival game, knocks you out of the SEC championship game, and then you get taken down by an ACC school in the playoffs to finish 11-2.
That didn't play in the ACC championship game. But right. You know, our eyes tell us Miami's got people. I mean, they've got the people to match up. And, you know, kind of the argument you make against Miami in that situation, you could have made against A&M because, yes, A&M plays in the SEC. But that conference schedule, it's not A&M's fault, but the way it worked out in terms of the conference slate that A&M ended up having to navigate, it wasn't the same as, say, like Texas or Alabama. And even that home win against South Carolina should have been a red flag. And I did take it kind of that way. They got down 30-3 to South Carolina at home. Now they raced back in the second half, hell of a comeback. And then to see them get trucked like they did by Texas 24-7 in the second half of the regular season finale. There were signs there. There was a lack of a callousing that probably took place because they didn't have the difficulty schedule-wise. I mean, they played Notre Dame in, like, what, week two? Mm-hmm. So even that was way back in the early stages of the season. But, you know, we've seen it with A&M in the past, whether it was Big Sum or now with Mike Elko, November and beyond – just traditionally hasn't been very, very good to the Aggies, who, by the way, another one of these teams that inexplicably can't kick the football very well either. You know, you get to that level, you kind of anticipate having some kickers. We didn't talk about Connor Talty either, but, you know, I didn't have Connor Talty being probably the best kicker of the opening weekend of the college football playoff.
No, it's he's had something of a turnaround since that Eastern Illinois game. There's no doubt about it. Came through with a big one. And I just turning back to the Alabama game just for a minute, might as well, right? I asked DeBoer about, and I understand it was 4th and 6. It wasn't 4th and 1 or 2. But when they went for the field goal there to go up 27-17, passed on a 4th and 6 that it wasn't in the red, wasn't quite in the red zone, right? 22-23 yard line in that neighborhood. Yep. But as aggressive as Alabama has been on 4th down throughout the season, Travis, and given the situation, given the chance to maybe go up 14, I thought it might be a tough call for Kalen DeBoer, but he said no, it was a pretty easy call.
Yeah, I mean, you got road game Groza, I call him now, because he's great on the road. You know, just as long as Connor Talty's kicking somewhere other than Bryant-Denny Stadium, apparently he's kind of money in the bank. And I understand it, though. You want to go up 2 scores there at that point in the game. You're really controlling the game, it feels like. Now, you do that, and then A&M goes down and cuts it immediately like 3, right? They go up 27-17. And then you can almost set your watch by it. You know, the opponent's going to go down and make it tight again. But give Talty a lot of credit, man. Both those kicks, no doubt about them. The second one from 40. And you did. You had the legitimate Groza Award winner on the other side. And when A&M needed them, couldn't come up with it. Now, the second one with about a minute 20 left or whatever, I don't think – Venables and that staff helped him. They ran a check down before they ran him out there from 51 yards out. And I know he had made 8 of 8 from 50 plus before that, but that's still in that those elements and in right. that situation, 51's not an easy kick.
No, it's not. Before we get out of here on the Talking Tide podcast, Travis, real quick, let's just hit on the quarterfinal matchups for the college football playoff. Alabama, of course, taking on Indiana in the Rose Bowl. We will preview that top to bottom when we next come at you here on Talking Tide. But real quick, the other matchups, Travis, Miami, Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl, Ole Miss, Georgia in that Sugar Bowl, Oregon, Texas Tech in the Orange Bowl, and the winner of the Alabama-Indiana game will be catching either Oregon or Texas Tech.
I got to think that's the Fiesta Bowl game with the winner of Oregon
Texas Tech.
And then I think Atlanta will be the other semifinal. So that would make sense with either Georgia or Ole Miss. Fascinating matchups. And I think, you know, Ohio State, Miami has a lot of potential, especially in terms of a line of scrimmage game. That game could end up being similar to what maybe Ohio State, Indiana was in the Big Ten right. championship.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. Ole Miss, Georgia, one to look forward to as well. Pete Golding trying to move on with this program and knock off Kirby Smart. New Orleans, if he can, down in that Sugar Bowl, should be a lot of fun as well. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Catch us here in about a week, and we will be ready to go post-Christmas, but certainly before New Year's Day, we will be previewing that Alabama-Indiana game. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. You've been watching and listening to the Ryer on YouTube channel, and we will talk to you next time.